The following is a Super Spectrum Radio production.
Since 1972, Carl Kolchak has reported on the strange and unusual. Las Vegas, Seattle, and Chicago have been just a few of his beats, with Kolchak continuously finding himself face to face with vampires, werewolves, phantoms, and all manner of creature that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Jason Stevens, and this is the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. So when you have finished this bizarre account, judge for yourself its believability, and then try to tell yourself, wherever you may be, it couldn't happen here. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Stevens, and this podcast series covers all things Carl Kolchak, a.k.a. the Night Stalker, and his wild world of the paranormal, supernatural, dangerous action that Carl is known to report on. And tonight we are covering episode 4 of Kolchak the Night Stalker television series, The Vampire. Joining me tonight will be Matt Pierce, who is a new convert to the cult of Kolchak and is watching the movies and series for the very first time before we record these episodes. And if you are new to Kolchak and his legacy, welcome. Welcome one and all. Let's get into it. Kolchak the Night Stalker, episode 4. The Vampire. That's the episode we are talking about today. Sent to LA to interview a controversial guru, Kolchak's more interested in tracking down and stopping an extremely vicious female vampire. Matt, this is your first time watching this episode. We just finished it up. Give me your initial thoughts.
So it was a good episode. It was funny, scary where it needed to be, I think. This one, I noticed the effects because of lighting, maybe, but like the special effects were really good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just a good, solid entry into Kolchak.
Interesting enough, this episode, The Vampire, was reworked from a pre-existing script. Originally, this was going to be the third TV movie, and it was going to take place in New York with Tony and Carl, where they would have left after Seattle, with Skorzeny returning from the dead as the vampire. But then the show was greenlit, and so it kind of fell to the wayside, and they reworked it for this episode, which then makes the main vampire, spoiler alert, a former victim of Skorzeny that wasn't found and burnt to ash at the time. We start things off in Las Vegas, familiar territory for Kolchak fans. And a woman, she's at night on the highway. There's a bunch of road work. She gets a flat tire. She pulls off, gets out. She's checking it up. And she gets her tire iron out of the back of her car, cutting her finger. So you see blood, I think for the first time in this series, on her finger. Which, I mean, it's red. It doesn't say it specifically blood. Maybe that's how they got past that. But the blood awakens something.
It does.
And what it awakens are two wriggly arms coming up out of that ground, and the lady sees them, freaks out, and takes off running away. It's later said that she tells the police, and they go back and just find a bunch of disturbed earth and chalk her up to being, you know, a hysterical woman.
Yeah, I do like, though, that normally, at least so far in my experience in Kolchak, normally this woman would be dead.
Yes. Usually the intro, the person is like the first victim.
She's not. She does get kind of dismissed, but that's just the police. But she lives to see another day and to have another flat tire some other time.
That's right. And then we kick over to the independent news service, the INS newsroom. We've got Carl at his desk talking to a well-dressed man named Swede. He knows from Las Vegas. He's on his way to be an anchorman elsewhere, but has stopped in to talk to Carl about some deaths that he thought Carl would find interesting. Not only did they start in the Vegas area and then work their way west towards Los Angeles, but all of the bodies have seen massive amounts of blood loss. So Carl's super interested in this, and he's wanting to get him more info. However, about that time, Tony Vincenzo starts to come back into the newsroom, and the Swede apparently owes him 500 smackers, so he takes off into the wind after telling Carl that TV is where it's at. He needs to get out of the newsroom. Ron Updike has been there trying to question him about TV, because Ron apparently just gloms onto any type of fame or fortune he possibly can, as Tony comes in and tells the guys that, he needs someone to travel to Los Angeles to do an interview with a famous guru about transcendental meditation for the INS, and he's looking straight at Carl, and Carl's like, nope, I can't go. I'm swamped with work, Tony. I'm swamped with work. Ron Updike, of course, sees palm trees and sunshine in his future, so starts glomming on, trying to go, and talking about all the things he knows about meditation and esoterica. And then Carl just starts like needling him and telling him the things that he doesn't know, and going, oh, well, I'm sure Tony, he'll be fine at it. I mean, it's a small story. It's fine. He'll have enough rudimentary knowledge, unlike me, who just happens to have a ton, but I can't possibly go. Effectively tricking Tony into sending Carl to LA. Why Carl tricked him, I don't know, because Tony initially wants Carl to go anyway. He's just so contrarian to anything Tony wants.
That, and I think that maybe Carl knows that if he just went along with it and said, yeah, I'll go, that Tony might catch on that he had ulterior motives, maybe.
That's true. Carl doesn't seem the type to want to randomly fly out places for an interview with anyone.
It's true.
It's not really his MO, no, as far as these stories we've seen him never get put in the paper go.
In fact, he complains about being sent places in other episodes.
Yes, he hates it. Yeah. He does hate it. And then we get a shot of LA itself, and we get a beautiful dark-haired femme fatale getting picked up on the street by a man in a car, heading back to his apartment, and they get ready to get down, and then she gets down and dirty by biting out his throat.
I'll do it.
And about that time, his roommate/girlfriend comes in with a load of groceries, screams and freaks out, and then we get the turn. The woman with the long black hair, who we'll later know as Catherine Rollins, opens her mouth and hisses, and we see the familiar fangs that we saw on Skorzeny in The Night Stalker.
Yeah.
Before also leaping onto that woman and killing her, making it a double homicide.
Or a double entree.
Indeed. Yeah. I remember when I first saw this episode, I initially thought two more vampires. Like maybe it was going to be like building an army, because initially, and it's just probably not my perception, but the arms that came out of the ground, I just assumed were male.
Mm.
And so I thought that maybe a vampire had created her and it was going to be like, here's a bunch of vampires, but nope, she's the vampire this episode. We see Carl on his Pan Am flight. He's just hanging out, living that life. And then whenever he gets to LA, his first stop is with the sheriff of a small town where a man was found dead in his car. So he gets into LA and then immediately drives out of LA to one of the previous murder scenes. The sheriff's pretty nice. He's got a dog with him. The car is there. And then Carl just starts asking him multiple questions. And this oddly southern police officer gets very upset, especially when he talks about how obviously the man was planning to paint that car so that way he could escape. And Carl's like, but the tape is on the inside of the windows.
Yeah.
With black like papering, like it's obviously keeping light. And Carl at this point he's from the get-go has been on vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to Carl, it's, you got to prove it's not a vampire, even at this point. That police officer, not pleased, and then talks about how other people who ask jackassy questions get their tires flattened around there. So Carl leaves.
Police are really nice, Las Vegas in the 1970s.
Yes, and Carl bringing up puncture wounds on the victim's neck, he just says a lot of things that the police just don't want to cooperate with or tell him about.
It's true.
And after that, of course, Carl has been on his own business. From the get-go, he's already started to investigate the story that he's not there to investigate, so he knows that he does, in fact, have responsibilities to do this interview with this guru. So he heads over to his house. He finds out that he's already gone. He's left for Dallas to be with his followers there. The house is up for sale, and Miss Faye Krueger is doing the selling. And after some mistaken identity of her thinking that he is there to kill termites, she finds out he's a reporter and then starts to talk to him about how she used to be a writer as well. Oh, she also thinks he was with the IRS for a bit.
Yeah.
Because it's INS, and it's Independent News Service, and I see I see the mix-up. And she starts talking about how she is well-known in that circle because she sold him the house initially, and she's friends with all of them, and they think highly of her. And she's willing to talk to Carl about all of it. And so he tells her that she can ghostwrite this article and like co-byline it with him in the way that he is just wanting any info he can possibly get, because now it turns out he missed his interview time. He didn't show up, which means he knows Tony is going to murder him.
Yep.
And he's still got to stay in LA to get this vampire stuff done. So he's like trying to any way he can to get this story that he wants to just get rid of out of the way. So he heads back to the hotel with Faye and drops her off and tells her, go ahead and start without me. And the doorman looks at it very weird, which it's a very sexually innuendo thing to have in this episode, I think.
Yeah.
It's like a piece of current comedy, you know? And he leaves her there to write while he takes off to a dun-dun-dun police press conference because we cannot have an episode of Kolchak the Night Stalker without a police press conference.
It's true. And going back to Faye, I really like her as like a sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
She's funny. She's
quick-witted.
She's very quick-witted. She holds her own against Carl as far as bringing the jokes and things.
Mm-hmm.
Not overtly. She's not a comedian, but just, you know, naturally she's a funny person.
So naturally, as you would know, when Carl gets to the press conference, it doesn't take him very long to totally piss off the police lieutenant in charge of the case, Lieutenant Mateo, who eagle-eyed watchers will know as Mr. Feeney from Boy Meets World,
yep,
the 90s sitcom.
Yep. He's also the voice of Kit the car in Knight Rider.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet Knight Rider. And of course, Mateo's like, there's no aspect of the supernatural is being considered in pursuit of this case. In fact, not only that, but the police have already arrested two individuals, two warlocks who are part of a devil cult. So it's obviously getting close to case closed on this.
Oh, yeah. Wrapped up. Done.
Wrapped up. Satanic panic in full effect. So while Carl's dealing with the fact that there are already people in custody for this, we get to see Catherine Rollins, the vampiress herself. Vampirus? Vampirus? The vampire.
The vampire.
The vampire herself, laid back in a nice little bar,
mm-hmm,
and she gets approached by none other than Ichabod Grace, pimp to the stars.
Ooh.
Pimp to the stars in L.A., and he runs a high-class prostitution service, but it's under the guise of a catering business. So you order catering, and it turns out it's a lady. It's a lady. He starts sending her on calls immediately because she's super attractive. She knows what she's doing. She's self-assertive. She's a little mysterious.
Ooh.
Unknowing that she's just going to murder everyone he sends her to.
Every single person. Yeah, and this guy's suit, it's almost a character by itself.
His suits throughout are quite... Just the combination of suit to tie to shirt and the various patterns on each let you know that while he is a high quality pimp, he is a pimp nonetheless.
Yep.
Kolchak makes his way to the apartment crime scene that we saw earlier, where the man and woman were both killed. Finds Mateo there, and he is checking out the dead woman's closet, and it is empty of all clothing. He also tells Kolchak to get the hell out of there, and does admit that there's something weird about the case that he just can't quite put his hands on, because in fact, why would two warlocks need all those women's clothes? Kolchak just gets right to the point. He does the thing that Carl Kolchak does, where he just openly and to his mind truthfully tells the police what he thinks about what is happening and how they can do their job. And they always hate it. And this time again, he tells him that he thinks it's the work of a vampire, how they can be stopped and how the vampire's superhuman and super strong and all these things. And he gets kicked out of the apartment, naturally.
Yes.
And so he's on his way out, and he sees a man in the floor, cleaning on the floor, and probably cleaning up blood stains or some such. And it turns out he's the building manager, and that he knows all about the people who live there, including the fact that the dead woman was the sister of Catherine Rollins, who had left for Vegas to ply her trade 3 years ago, which puts her right in the target of Janos Skorzeny. Now, they don't mention Janos Skorzeny this entire episode. This entire episode is based around vampires, and if you hadn't watched the Night Stalker TV movie, there is a disconnect there with why does Carl believe these are vampires so much?
And so fast.
So fast.
Immediately he thinks it's a vampire.
They just assume you've watched them, and I'm sure most of the people that watch this show had seen that movie. It was, I mean, the highest rated TV movie of all time up to that point.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was the case, but they definitely, without saying specific elements to the Night Stalker, they definitely put it together with it easily. So it also makes more sense that Catherine Rollins took the clothes of her sister. So she's come back basically from being buried as a vampire, and she's just taken those clothes because they were her sister's clothes. They probably fit her too. She's got a wardrobe. Easy as that, which should tip off Carl that is probably a woman. The building manager also mentions that Grace's Catering, which links Carl to Catherine's whereabout, because Grace's Catering is the fake catering service where you order prostitutes. Ooh. And her sister also worked for Grace's Catering and kept really weird hours.
Well, you know, you gotta wake up early to bake those donuts.
Mm-hmm. Stay out late, all night sometimes.
Yeah.
So Carl goes back to his hotel, which is so weird. We got Faye there. Faye is in the hotel room. Carl calls Grace's Catering. It's not even in code. It's straight up, he's ordering a prostitute through the phone. Faye is sitting there, and then he asks to borrow Faye's lipstick. Faye is more than overjoyed to give it to him. It's such a weird disconnect for Faye, who's just like, whatever.
It's an odd scene because she's like, do you need me to help you out with something? Like, it's I don't know. I don't know what the context of the scene is, unless it's just them being funny and weird.
It is very weird.
Yeah.
But he takes Faye's lipstick and puts a crucifix on the back of his doorway and then lies in wait. So we get this woman. She comes to the door. It's nighttime. She knocks on the door. Carl, like, muffled answers, asks who it is. She comes in. She's looking around. It's dark in there. I imagine some red flags are going up for her. She's probably dealt with some dangerous situations. I imagine any sex worker has to obviously think that they could be attacked at any time. It's a very dangerous profession, especially, I imagine, LA, where it's illegal.
Mm.
She's in there. She's at the bed. Carl's just, like, oddly saying, like, yeah, go ahead, you know. And then, boom, slams the door, lights on. He has the cross out. She turns around. She sees the cross to the door. It doesn't affect her because it is not Catherine Rollins. She thinks Carl is just trying to, like, convert her to Jesus.
Yep, it's pretty good. This is also a really good scene.
And she does let Carl know that Catherine has just been sent somewhere else. And he's like, why would they send herself? She has been sent to the house of a LA Rams football player.
Yeah.
Which shows just the level that Ichabod, and the circles he travels in.
He makes really good donuts.
And so Carl, and she's talking about how also Ichabod's going to be super pissed because she's not going to show up with her money. And he's like, she's like, $200. And Carl's just like, $200. Carl ordered a prostitute, not even thinking about the fact that if things didn't work out exactly the way he thought, it was going to cost him money.
Right, yeah.
And so we're assuming that Carl paid her. But maybe the INS got a pink slip with a receipt for Grace's Catering. It's tough to say. And then we get a shot over to the football player's house. Fireplace going, things are happening, music's on, and these weird, incredibly fast, like, hummingbird kisses that he and Catherine are sharing, it's very off-putting.
It's like a 12-year-old with his first girlfriend kisses.
Yeah, it's very, it's just these little closed mouth repeated pecks while they're laying down. It's very odd. Even more odd are multiple of his buddies, I guess also players on the team, showing up to surprise him.
Yeah.
And it seems like, with their attitude and drinks in hand, that they knew he was going to have a woman there and that they were just going to show up. And I don't even want to think about what they were planning to do, but it doesn't matter because they catch Catherine in the throes of chowing down. And so then she gets up, and then we see her use superhuman strength to just murder all of them.
Yeah, this is very effective because these are all very large, very tall men.
Yes.
And she's not that big.
No, and she throws them through plate glass windows. Yep. She's throwing them through the living room, all under the furniture, throwing them hard enough that somehow they are dying.
She kills the entire starting lineup of the LA Rams.
But there are chalk lines all around, so I'm assuming that after she knocked, because the way she tossed them, I mean, you're not going to die from that. So I'm assuming she just drained them all, like, or attempted to during that time. And so Carl shows up at the house in the middle of all this melee where she's tossing these guys, doing stuff, and he's just like, and she comes for him. She comes for Carl. And so he grabs two fireplace instruments and creates, like, a makeshift crucifix, and she's just, like, pushed away from it. The police are coming. The lights are flashing, she's gone, and once again, we're at a familiar scene. A scene where there are multiple dead bodies, and Carl Kolchak's just hanging out in the middle of all of it. Mateo, super pissed that Carl's there, and wanting him arrested immediately. However, Carl is constantly telling him, like, this is a vampire, she has superhuman strength, she's crazy fast, she's drinking blood, she's like, even your police officers attempted to chase her down and could not catch up with her. And that can't be denied. I mean, they admitted to doing that. But Mateo still thinks the murders are the work of a cult, and that when they were chasing her, there was long hair, but it doesn't mean it was a woman, because a lot of the coven members have long hair. Dirty, dirty, satanic hippies are Mateo's excuse for all this horrible things happening. And he hits his limit. Mateo has enough. He makes a phone call. Much like Carl, he memorizes all random telephone numbers and calls Tony Vincenzo at home in bed, tells him all about Carl. And of course, Tony's like, let me talk to him. And so Vincenzo just tears him down for not writing about the guru thing, because he doesn't need to worry about these murders. He's not over there for that. He needs the guru. That's the whole thing.
Yep.
Wherever the head INS stuff is coming from, we're assuming New York, they want this story. It's one of Tony's only jobs, is to make sure someone under his employ writes this story. And the one guy he flies out to do this story isn't doing the story. But you know, I mean, Carl has bigger fish to fry. He's got lives to save.
Yeah.
So what can you do? What can you do? And this whole scene is pretty well done. I mean, I think that seeing the football players getting tossed around does show her full strength, which in the Night Stalker movie you do get from Skorzeny, mostly when he's tossing around nurses and aides and stuff in the hospital.
Yeah.
You don't see her get shot at all in this one, which is different from a lot of previous quote-unquote monsters of the week in the Kolchak universe.
Mm-hmm. And then the difference I would say, too, is Skorzeny's large. The actor's just a large man. Her throwing the football players, I think, is a little bit more effective just because it shows, like, this is maybe like 110-pound woman, and she's throwing linebackers across the room. So it definitely gives you the feeling of she has enhanced strength from being a vampire and just enhanced agility and things like that. It's really well done scene. And then it also flows into the, I guess, the satanic panic background that's going on with the police showing up and thinking it's Warlock still.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little early for that. I mean, the overall, like, the insanity of the satanic panic.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely that was spurred on because at the time this was in the back of people's minds. So obviously this was a good, you know.
Right, because LA, you got, like, the Zodiac, you got
The Night Stalker.
The Night Stalker, yeah, all those things, so.
This scene wraps up with Mateo telling Carl that he needs to be out of L.A. by 6 a.m. on a flight, or they will put him on one. And then he finds an officer who he gives to Carl and tells him to take him back to his hotel room because Carl has tired of the city. And the police officer is very much about strong-arming Carl out of there. So now we're down to 24 hours, basically.
Mm-hmm.
For Carl to get out. So he's got to get this story knocked out. He's got to stop this vampire. Everything he can. So thanks to Faye, he goes through all the recent rental properties that have went up for sale that could be conducive to someone who is needing to stay out of the daylight. Everyone who needs to stay out of just the public eye. Just overall, something that a vampire would enjoy. Mm. And in the Hollywood Hills, he finds just that. This old decaying mansion. It's all isolated. So at night, no less, I'm assuming because it took all day to find this out, Carl goes when the vampire is at its strongest at night. He goes to the house and starts to dig around. And then she shows up. He's like at the door, like trying to get in. And he hears hissing. He keeps hearing stuff around him. You think maybe it's a snake or maybe it's like an animal. No, no, it is her. Once again, hissing. The only dialogue Catherine Rollins has the entire episode. Hissing. No speaking whatsoever. And she attacks Carl full on, chasing him down. He's fighting her off. He fights her with the cross. She's chasing him. And then he leads her up onto like this grassy hill near this monument. And she's on him and they're rolling around and she's biting at his neck. In fact, I thought she got him at one point because, I mean, her face is in there.
Yeah.
He takes the crucifix and puts it onto her back and it burns through her clothes. So she flips over on her back. She's trying to like scoot to get away. And about that time, Carl, who has arrived previously with a canister of gasoline, lights it up. He's poured this gasoline. He lights it up. This massive crucifix in the Hollywood Hills goes up in flames, a massive inferno, the likes of which haven't been seen since other people burn them. It's I don't know. And he put fire in a circle as well. She's laying amongst a circle of fire with a giant burning crucifix. And so she is just paralyzed, just laid in the grass, can't move whatsoever. And as she lays there, the police sirens come up, the police lights are coming up because there's a massive fire in the Hollywood Hills where, as we know now, wildfires occur.
Yeah.
And they catch Carl. Much like at the end of The Night Stalker, he staked her. Mallet, stake, getting it.
Yep.
Before we get into the end of this and how this thing ends, let's talk about this overall section of the show. So Carl rose up. He does have the can of gasoline, which in my head I thought he's going to light the house on fire or mm-hmm. something. But that's not the case. The plan is clever in as he wasn't actually trying to go in the house and stop her. He was really trying to lure her into this trap, which he did.
Right.
Almost at the expense of his own life. It just involves a giant burning cross.
I would say the difference in Carl doing it and maybe some other people doing it mm-hmm. is Carl doesn't care that it's a cross. He just knows that it works against the vampire.
That's true.
He's not doing it for any other reason than it will stop the vampire.
He's not put it in anyone's yard.
No.
He's not doing it out of some type of racial motivation.
Right.
He's
right,
simply right. wanting to stop a vampire.
Yeah, and to him, it's like, well, no, this will stop the vampire. I don't care what it is. It'll end her, and she's going to kill all of L.A. if, you know, we don't do something about her. And it's like he's matter-of-fact about it. It's like he's matter-of-fact that the police should be carrying stakes and mallets. And
doing it themselves,
Yeah.
Yeah, and he stops her. He kills her. And then we get the closing narration. Carl's on a plane. He's recording this. They booked me for murder, just like I thought they would. But then, after 12 hours, they let me go. They never did say why, but while I was sitting in Lieutenant Mateo's office waiting for execution, I happened to see a coroner's report on Catherine Rollins. I quote the coroner, "The tissue structure of the individual appeared to be that of a female, species human, who had been dead at least 3 years. This is a medical conundrum for which I have no explanation. 3 years." Dun, 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 and then it goes off. So Carl, at this point, knew he was probably going to go away for murder.
Yeah.
I mean, well, how many times can you stop these paranormal beings that people don't see as paranormal and not just be seen as a crazed killer?
That's why he's so frustrated, I think, mm-hmm. all the time, because other people should be doing this. And they won't. They won't listen to him. And so he has to do it. And time after time, he's accused of murder. And he's not really murdering anybody. He's saving lives. But he's also not qualified for it. It should be the police doing it. Or it should be the government doing it. And he can't get them to listen. And I'd be mad too.
Yeah. I think this episode is amazing from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I think it lays it all out pretty well. If this were, in fact, a TV movie, they would have had a little more time. And I think they would have done a better job at setting up some of who the people were beforehand. Mm-hmm. So you're not trying to link it together later with just people's reports and narrations. Mm-hmm. But as a successor, as a sequel to The Night Stalker, I think it's really cool that like one of his victims escaped and it shows that like this vampirism could just spread. However, she wasn't turning anyone. I guess, well, then again, they burned the bodies because they worried about them coming back.
Yeah.
She killed several people. Did they burn those bodies?
You have to believe they did.
Or was L.A. then just run amok with these vampires?
Maybe. This episode is also really smart about setting things up. So the crucifix is set up very early. Mm-hmm. He sees it on the hill. Whenever the real estate lady thinks that he's IRS and not INS, mm-hmm. but then he uses it with the building manager to like get some more information out of him because he's like, oh, I'm the INS. It's a good thing you don't talk to reporters. Mm-hmm. It's really smart. I like it.
Yeah, it's overall great. I think everybody played their parts really well. And of course, Lieutenant Mateo. I mean, it may just be knowing that actor, but I feel like he's the most understandable of the police that we've dealt with so far.
He is. He also seemed like he was actually listening at times.
I mean, he did have his own belief. I mean, these warlocks, they were in jail.
Well, you know.
And then I guess Carl took their spot and then they let him go after that.
I don't know.
But overall, another fantastic entry into Kolchak lore.
Yeah, I think so.
And there you have it, guys. Episode 6 of the Kolchak Legacy Podcast covering episode 4 of Kolchak the Night Stalker, The Vampire. Thank you so much for listening and for all of your positive support on Instagram and, of course, through all of the podcasting pod catchers that you listen to us with the great reviews. Be sure, of course, if you like this show, to follow it, to rate it, and review it. And you can follow us on Instagram at The Kolchak Legacy, where we post up all kinds of odds and ends and ask questions, and you guys are chatting it up. I feel like we're building a good little cult of Kolchak community. And if you would like to send us a message straightforward, something secret, something hidden, something we can keep safe or put in a INS edition, then be sure to hit us up on Gmail at thekolchaklegacy@gmail.com. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this Super Spectrum Radio production.